Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Bob Surratt.
That old DJ is worth listening to.
Bob Surratt, start your day.
Thank you very much. 6:39 every Monday at this time, we check in with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. How are you doing this morning, Dr. Most?
Well, I'm doing great, Bob. Nice weekend. It's tough to come back to work, but boy, the weather's finally changing.
Everybody was out enjoying it yesterday. How concerned are you and your colleagues about this B.1.1.7 variant? That's the UK variant, right?
Yeah. So we're fairly concerned, you know, just because we're looking to see what's happening in Europe. As we have throughout this entire thing, Europe often precedes what's going to happen here in the States. We know that the variant is going to be the predominant variant here probably within the next couple of weeks. And we still are uncertain as to how well the vaccines will work against the variant. The two, Moderna and Pfizer, appear to work fairly well, and Johnson & Johnson, we're still trying to figure that out, but it really should be even better than the other two, mainly because it was tested during the same time.
The airports were jammed over the weekend, and that's a concern. I mean, people need to continue masking up and washing up and backing up whether they're vaccinated or not, correct?
Yeah, so, you know, the airports, obviously not the airports themselves were the concern, but also where did people end up going when they got on those airplanes? You know, we know that it's safe on the airplanes with the air circulation, the air turnover rate, and wearing masks. You know, we really found that we really aren't getting a lot of people there getting COVID while on the airplane. Now, in a crowded airport, when you're lining up, absolutely. And probably what's even more discouraging is what we've seen going on in Florida with the spring break individuals and no masks whatsoever, no distancing, screaming, yelling, big crowds. That's probably one of our bigger concerns.
Here's a question that a few of our listeners sent to us. Is it true that if you've had COVID and you only have one shot, you already have ample antibodies?
Well, you know, we don't want to put that out there. However, we do know that individuals who have had COVID and then get the vaccine get about a 10 time the response rate that someone who did not have COVID. We still would say get the complete series because we don't know enough about this as far as how long the natural immunity, in other words, those of you who had COVID, how long that will last, as well as we're still uncertain as to even how long getting both shots and how long that immunity will last. So really what we're trying to do is have people stay with the science so that we get a good grasp in the future of how well not only these vaccines work, but how well and how long our natural immunity lasts.
Interesting new study reported the other day, taking low-dose aspirin may reduce the risk of severe illness or death. What do you know about this, Dr. Most?
Yeah, you know, we found out very early on that COVID, for some reason, has a propensity to cause blood clots, small blood clots in the lungs as well as large blood clots elsewhere in the body. And we tell people, boy, you know, people know that aspirin is what we call a blood thinner. It's kind of interesting that we use that terminology. The blood doesn't get any thinner. It's just that aspirin kind of impacts platelets and stops them from being the ability to clump and keeps them slippery. So we know that people that take aspirin have a higher propensity for bleeding, but it also allows us to know that it will decrease the number of clots that they have. So this study showed that individuals who actually took low-dose aspirin had a much decreased risk of being in the ICU, being on a ventilator, and having bad outcomes. Now, that being said, we don't want people to run out and start taking aspirin. You need to at least talk to your doctor. Aspirin on a regular use, you have a chance of bleeding ulcers in the stomach. You have a chance of other bleeding. So intermittent aspirin use in the past when we used it for fevers was okay. But on a continuous basis, you certainly want to check with your primary care doctor before starting this, although it certainly does look to have a good protection and something that might make people feel a little bit better.
And with more and more people about to get the vaccine now, now it's probably good to remind everyone about what you should take and shouldn't take before the vaccine. You've said this before. It's okay to take aspirin, but what should you avoid before getting the shot?
Yeah, you know, if you take Advil, if you take anti-inflammatories for arthritis or for muscle pains or for anything else, that's okay to go ahead and take that. Don't stop taking your regular medications. But what we're really finding is that we don't want people to preemptively, you know, I feel fine, but I'm going to get my shot today, so I'm going to take, you know, Advil or one of the ibuprofens. We're saying, hey, refrain from doing that. See if you get the symptoms first, because you're turning off your immune system, or not your immune system, you're turning off your inflammatory response, and we really want to make sure that we capture the best effect of the vaccine. But interesting news this morning, Bob, coming out on AstraZeneca, you know, the one we've all been waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
They just released the data this morning. Very positive results in the U.S. clinical trial, about an 80% effective rate. So we will probably see them submitting for emergency use authorization here in the next couple of weeks. Maybe too late for making an impact here, but, you know, here in the United States, we're sitting on 30, 40 million doses of AstraZeneca. So getting that into people's arms could be very helpful.
Yeah, sounds like it. It's our Monday morning house call from Dr. Kevin Most. This health headline grabbed our attention this week, Dr. Most. Eating before 8:30 in the morning can help lower the risk for type 2 diabetes, according to a new study by Northwestern University. What's this all about?
Yeah, it's interesting, Bob. You know, we're looking at an epidemic of type 2 diabetes. So it's great that Dr. Ali and his team at Northwestern is looking into this. And what they actually found is they found that people that started eating breakfast prior to 8:30, and regardless of how they ate throughout the day, had lower blood sugar levels and lower insulin resistance. And let me explain kind of a little bit about that. You know, we all hear about type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, the pancreas doesn't make enough insulin, so we have to give the body insulin. People get shots of insulin or have insulin pumps. That insulin allows blood glucose that's in the bloodstream to get into the cells for energy. Type 2 diabetes, we make plenty of insulin, but our body just becomes resistant to it, so that we need to trick it to use the insulin. That's what we're seeing right now across the country, is with our increased number of people with obesity, we're starting to see more and more type 2. So Dr. Ali's study is saying, hey, wait a second, you know, it's not so much on the timing, or excuse me, the duration of when you're eating, how often you're eating throughout the day. It's more on when you start in the morning. So it's fascinating and really will make an impact on people that do what we term the intermittent fast, as a way to think that they're losing body weight and that it's good for their health.
Speaking of intermittent fasting, and this came up, we were talking about this last week, a lot of people swear by this as a way to lose weight, especially belly fat. And I remember hearing for years that you should not go long periods of time without eating, because then when you do eat, your body grabs onto the fat because it's sort of regulating itself to for the fact that there's not going to be a lot of food for a long time. Better grab the fat and store it. So is intermittent fasting good or not?
It's a great question, right? And it's very popular right now. Intermittent fasting, for those of you who aren't aware of it, there's often an intermittent fasting called 16/8, where you only eat for 8 hours of the day. Often it's from 1 o'clock in the afternoon till 9 o'clock at night, and then the rest of those hours, the other 16 hours, you're not eating at all. And exactly what you said, you will start to lose weight. As a matter of fact, you know, the predicted weight loss for people on intermittent fasting is about a pound, pound and a half a week. But you don't lose the visceral fat, the fat that's around your organs. The body figures this out. The body says, oh my gosh, after a couple days of this, the body says, wait a second, I'm not going to eat. I need to save, you know, I need to make sure that I have fat for energy later on. And then also it's going to take whatever you're eating and say, hey, I think we're going to hit this fasting part again. I need to save something for that. So it's very interesting that we'll see a decrease in weight, but not in belly fat. You'll see maybe a decrease in subcutaneous fat as we burn that through the fasting portion. But your body is almost tricking you because it's saying, hey, if you're going to treat me like this, this is what I'm going to do to protect myself and to protect you. So it's fascinating when you look at people that are using it to lose weight need to understand what part of weight they're losing. And is it actually good for you? Or are you convincing your body that you're going to be putting it during a stressor for 16 hours a day? So fascinating studies coming out now about weight loss.
Well, what about the old adage that you should have many meals, frequent meals, and that revs up your metabolism, and that's the best way to lose weight? What about that?
Yeah. Many people will think, hey, many small meals throughout the day is going to be the best thing for you. Why? You won't get these big swings that we see with blood sugars. You know, the body is going to say, hey, I took in a lot of food, and now I'm going to put the energy into the bloodstream, and your blood sugar goes up, and then it crashes down as you fast. A lot of people think, hey, keep a steady stream of good, healthy food throughout the day. Eating small meals will keep your blood sugar at a more even level, not stress the body, not stress, you know, the metabolism side of it. So there are so many. I mean, if you could open a bookstore on weight loss books, but certainly there's many people who feel that intermittent fasting is great for weight loss, but there's many others that say from a healthy position, eat many small meals throughout the day. It's probably the best thing for your metabolism and the best thing for your blood sugar.
I think I'm going to go.
And just be careful what you're eating.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm not a big proponent of intermittent fasting. My wife swears by it, though, and she's trying to get me to forego breakfast. And, you know, we have dinner at 5:30, 6:30, and then she says, you don't really need to eat till lunchtime. But I'm telling her what you said.
Yeah, I you know, believe me, whoever comes up with the next greatest idea is going to sell a bunch of books. And then as science looks at it, we're going to say, okay, you might lose weight, but here's the other thing that's actually happening to your body. So it's not everything that happens when you stand on a scale. It's what else you're doing inside your body that we need to understand.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. I need some breakfast.
Get breakfast.
We'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you, as
you
always.
You got it. Take care.